Welcome to the Wine Atelier Podcast, your insider's guide to mastering wine with certified sommelier Stephanie Miskew.
Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I'm extremely excited about today's episode because I have a very special guest with me. I have Laurent Drouin of Maison Joseph Drouin in Burgundy and Domaine Drouin in Oregon. And welcome, Laurent. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Bonjour, Stephanie. It's a real pleasure, real joy being with you today.
Thank you so much. And you just, you know, I was so excited to feature you because you have just not only this amazing history in one of the world's most renowned wine regions, but, you know, just with the way your family's been involved in the wine world and how you've now expanded to Oregon, I'm so excited to just get into asking you all these questions. But if you want to, you know, for people who aren't as familiar as I am with, you know, your family's history in Burgundy, why don't you just start by telling me a little bit about, I mean, what it was like growing up in this amazing winemaking family?
Well, I would say until, you know, first of all, we're 138 years old, and until I turned 14, 15 years old, I did not realize what was going on behind the name Joseph Drouin, or even the name Drouin, or even the Burgundy overall. I was seeing people coming to the house, having dinners with my father. My father all constantly talking about wines, and for me that was kind of a beverage, and that was it. Until 14 and 15, then you start realizing that a few people started to address and to talk to me about you know, how fabulous the wines are, how great the region is, and the history about Rouen, and it's kind of an eye opening when you're about that age, because you start, not without feeling the pressure, but you start seeing that little flame inside of you getting bigger and bigger, and you realize a little bit later that the name means something, the region is fascinating, and you have people from all over the planet coming to Burgundy to taste the wine, to hear about the story, and to discover the whole region. Having Burgundy, the whole Burgundy as a playground was a joy. But again, until 14, 15, I did not realize all what was going on behind. Now I do. 50 years after, I definitely do.
I bet. That's great.
I used to play hide and seek in the cellar with my siblings, roller skating as well in the cellar. But it's the spark for me was really when I had my father was welcoming customers or friends from the United States, mainly at the beginning, and I was, America was the big dream for all of us, and obviously those people trying to talk about anything related to the wine and the family and everything. So you, it definitely sparked something in you, and it makes me proud.
I bet, as it should. That's amazing. And I think it's equally amazing how you work with, you know, your brothers and sisters all together. Now, did you all kind of have the same passion for the family business at the same time? Or how did it come about? Or when did you start to realize you were all going to be working together in the family business?
It's always a very, I would say, a very tricky question. But overall, my brother Philippe joined the company in 1985. After doing a business school, and Véronique joined in the mid 80s, and I joined in 93, and Frédéric around that time as well, 94 or something like that. And it just happened completely naturally, I would say. It's as I said, I mean, the little flame you have in inside of you start to grow up over time. Then you do your business school, your university, your college, whatever, to get educated and after that, I've been working, for example, if I take myself as an example, I've been working in a bank for about a year, mm-hmm. until, because I did not want to be in the wine family, and until I realized I was missing something. Yeah. Now, if you ask me how did that happen with my siblings and myself, the best person would be to ask my father, but we already asked him, and he said I didn't do anything. It just, so maybe quietly he was putting some strings in the back. He was pushing us to one direction, but I have absolutely never felt the pressure of my parents to join the family. It was all coming from me. And it's exactly the same for Philippe, Véronique, and Frédéric. Yes.
That's amazing. Wow. Mm-hmm. And like, tell us a little bit about more about your role in the company, what specifically it is that you do.
Well, I'm more in the commercial and marketing aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But just to come back on the four of us, what we do, I mean, you need someone in the vineyard managing the whole estate. And I would say that's Philippe. Mm-hmm. You need someone in the winery producing the wine, and that's Véronique. And she's doing an incredible, incredible job. You need someone on the market just to make sure that the distribution is pretty good. And you need someone making sure that the three previous, you know, siblings are go along together and are going to the same direction. And that's Frédéric's job as the president. So I'm covering the distribution in the United States, in Canada, and the Caribbean. And I was doing this from France and until 2005, when I decided to move to the United States with my wife and the kids to be in touch with the market and be closer to the family as well, I would say.
Gotcha. And is there ever any overlap between like what you all do? And then was it just a natural that Véronique would be the winemaker? Like how did that decision kind of come about? That's so unique for her to be like the female winemaker in Burgundy. I think it's amazing. She's amazing. How did that exactly come about?
Well, first of all, in the early 70s, my father was the first maison or négociant, propriétaire négociant to hire the woman as a winemaker, being in charge of such a large company. My father always has felt that women in general have a very, very good palate and very refined palate for wine. And he's sensitive to elegance and finesse, which is the style of Joseph Juan. And after having Laurence, I just believe that naturally my sister, who has a very good palate, was started developing same thing, that sort of a passion line. And maybe my father pushed him a little bit to that direction. I don't know. But it just happened naturally. There is no overlap. The only overlap that you could see would be between Frédéric and myself, because Frédéric is in the business overall and Véronique and I'm on the market. So sometimes some decision regarding marketing and commercial aspect, but it's kind of an overlap, but we just deal with it very naturally with no tension whatsoever between us. So again, it just happened naturally, and three boys and one girl, obviously the girl has to be the winemaker because she's talented.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think that's wonderful. So here you are, this amazing family making beautiful wines. And how did the decision come about to kind of, you know, set up a winery in Oregon? And how did that process come about? Because not only are you making these amazing Burgundian wines, but then, you know, how did Oregon kind of get on your radar, and why Oregon in particular?
Well, first of all, my father, who's been traveling to the United States in the United States in the 60s, went to Portland several times and has been exposed at that time to a few wines from what we call the pioneers in Oregon, the Steamboat guy, David Led, David Lilleshein, Steve Carey, Dick Ponzi. He just had that in his mind, that he tasted some very interesting wine, but interesting in a good way. Then constantly going back to that region, California was obviously on the rise. Oregon was in the shadow of California. Everybody was looking at California. Right. And in the late 70s, I think it's David Lett who organized the tasting comparing Burgundy Pinot Noir and Oregon Pinot Noir. And among the top wines rated was one Oregon Pinot. So my father was kind of how can I say that? It was kind of an eye-opening that what
right.
He was 2 years before, I mean, was you know, coming to, that was true. And and in the mid 80s, being a Pinot Noir producer, he received the call from David Elsheim, and there was a beautiful property for sale that was wheat and a few Christmas trees planted. And he went there and with Véronique and came back and said, now we have, I just bought 225 acres in Dundee, and I had no idea where that was located, but I think we can do something over there. And Véronique became the wine, was named as the winemaker. And I'm doing a long story short, but then that's how it did happen. So he was, I have to say that my father really, really is the visionaire in the whole generations, because he invested in Chablis in the mid 60s when not too many people were there. Right. And he went to Oregon at a time the whole world was looking at the rise of California. And he always believed that Oregon had an incredible potential to produce elegant, refined, delicate, and subtle wines. And turns out that 30 years after, it looks like he was true.
Wow. So
and you know, also, but that it's hard to expand the domain in Burgundy. You know, price of land is through the roof. It's very hard to buy some domains. So that was a good way, intellectually, wine-wise, and as an opportunity, it was a good way to expand the overall business and passion, and share the passion of the family around the world. So.
Gotcha. No, it's wonderful. And I mean, nowadays, are you finding more, you know, quite a few more Burgundy houses are looking to Oregon more than any other region in the U.S.? Right?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's right. When we invested in Oregon, you had 25 wineries or 25 producers.
Wow.
Not really wineries. The first serious winery was built by my father in Dundee. And it was the first by gravity, by the way. And now you have more than 700 producers and wineries in Oregon 30 years after, which is completely crazy. And a lot of Burgundians went there. Jadot went there not long time ago with Resonance, and Jean-Nicolas Méaud as well, and Dominique Lafont as well. So you do have a lot of Burgundians who finally, you know, said, well, Monsieur Drouin, you're crazy. They said that in the mid-80s. And after 30 years, they said, you were not that crazy. Bouchard just took over Beaufrère.
Wow.
We do, which is good, because it's great for the whole region. It's great for the people of Oregon. And it's giving even more depth to what we've been saying for many years. And it's a confirmation about the fact that my father was definitely among the pioneers in Oregon. So it's exciting to see what's going on in Oregon.
Absolutely. No, it really, really is. It's such a dynamic region. And how would you kind of compare or contrast your approach to, you know, producing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in Burgundy compared to producing them in Oregon?
First of all, the soil is different. It's mainly limestone and clay and marl in Burgundy, and it's a volcanic soil in Oregon, so red crush basalt. The weather is very similar, but because of that differences in the soil, we know that the grapes would probably ultimately not produce exactly the same wine, meaning there would be more color, more intensity in the wines from Oregon versus the Burgundians. Mm-hmm. There's no earthiness as well in Oregon, but we did not know that at the beginning. So right. We had a very similar approach in the winemaking, but before the winemaking, it starts in the vineyard. So my father was the first one to plant high density in Oregon. He said Pinot Noir needs to stress to produce an elegant and refined wine to really get the components of the soil. And then being very gentle and not too technical in the winemaking, not too much extraction as well. Mm-hmm. Doing by gravity, it's going back to being gentle. And so that it's honestly the vinification is very, very similar in Oregon and Burgundy. Véronique is trying to bring out the elegance of the Pinot, the subtlety of the Pinot. And yes, there is a bit more intensity in structure and body and slightly higher in alcohol in Oregon. But it's related to the soil and a little bit to the weather as well. But overall, we definitely are not trying to copycat what we do in Burgundy. Burgundy is Burgundy, has its own identity. And we want to highlight and develop and promote the identity of the wines of Oregon. That's what we call the diversity.
Right. Right, that definitely makes sense, and they're beautiful wines.
And it's the same thing for the Chardonnay. The Chardonnay at the beginning, I mean, was It was not intentional. We just, I remember that Véronique said one day, oh, it would be fun to do. If we do good with Pinot, maybe we can do something nice or interesting with the Pinot Noir, with the Chardonnay. Uh-huh. And so we planted slightly more than 10 acres of Chardonnay over there. Now it's a little bit more, but and that was it. So it's, again, it's exciting, it's great, and after 30 years the story continues, and hopefully the next generation will even more develop and getting to know that region even more.
Yes, has there been any mention of the next generation getting involved? I know everyone's pretty young, but you know, has there been any talk of that already, or?
Well, Lorraine, Véronique number one is, who has her own cuvée, by the way, in Oregon, the cuvée.
Right.
And Lorraine seems to be very interested, maybe not in the technical aspect, but again, the marketing, the promotion and commercial aspect. Arthur, I do not know. And Louise, maybe not. It's very early or too soon to tell, but soon, one of them, I hope, one of them will be taking over, and I'll be able to play golf more often. And
exactly.
But I do hope that we'll be able to pass on the key to one of the member of the fifth generation, and I have no doubt that this will happen.
That's wonderful and so exciting. It's amazing to have that history. Is your father still involved in?
Yes, my father is still involved. Well, if you ask him, he's going to tell you he's retired. And obviously, if you ask him, not. We need his expertise and knowledge and experience.
Yeah. I mean, he must be so proud, though. I can only imagine.
I think so. And he still has not missed one single vintage since 1987 in Oregon.
Wow.
He's been for every vintage. So he's doing the one in Burgundy, and sometimes, obviously, there's an overlap. So he does one in Burgundy and then goes to Oregon just not to miss it. So he's 84. Obviously, he's slowing down anyway, but he's still involved. And we still have so much to learn from him.
Oh, still passionate and involved. That's amazing. Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. And another reason I really wanted to do this interview with you today was because I'd really like to kind of get your thoughts on how to kind of demystify the Burgundy wine region. Like, I featured your wines in a tasting just last week. Everyone loved them. But, you know, the American consumer, we're used to seeing, you know, the grape variety on the label and all that jazz. And I just kind of wanted to see, for people really interested in learning more about the Burgundy wine region and tasting the wines more, did you have any advice for those folks?
I would say it starts with one thing, obviously tasting wines, and trust your wine store, trust your retailer, trust the person who you know, who's in touch with wine, like you do. I mean, you do tasting, you open a bottle, and then you slightly explain the wine, and on a very simple way, and then if you're interested, keep talking and discussing with that person who's showing you the wine, and go a little bit deeper. So it starts by being in touch with your retailer. Then secondly, it's about tasting wines and asking questions whenever you can. There's a beautiful tool also today, which is called, you know, the web. You can get many information on that. There is one book regarding Burgundy that I recommend. I have no financial interest in it. It's called The Wines of Burgundy, and it's from Sylvain Pitiot and Jean-Charles Servan. It's complete, very good information to start with and to understand the whole dynamic of what's going on in Burgundy and the terroir and the location and the origin. And ultimately, it's to book tickets going to Burgundy and spend some time in the region. Just drive, rent a bike or so. But try not at the beginning. That's when I said to my friends when they say, oh, I know nothing about wine. I say, you don't need to know. I mean, start by opening the bottle and then you like it. If you really want to move to step two, try to understand why you like it. Try to understand where the wine is coming from. and discuss and talk, and don't be shy to ask questions to anybody who's wine related. No, it starts with that. And the more you're going to know, and then the more information you're going to get, you're going to find your way through a specific region and get in touch with that region and ultimately in love with the region. That's how it starts. But don't try to play the role of someone you are not. And sometimes I see people trying to be complicated with wine, mm-hmm. and you miss the point. You know, wine is a social beverage, and it's a beverage that should give you pleasure. Never forget that.
Right. Oh, that's amazing advice. I'll be sure to link up the book that you mentioned in the show notes as well. But I couldn't agree with you more as far as developing a great relationship with a local retailer, because they can mm-hmm. kind of really be a great guide for you. I totally agree.
Yes, it's that's the way. If I want to learn something, even wine. I mean, honestly, I just go to my local shop and. The other day I was trying to learn a little bit more about the Ribera del Duero wine. So not
very, right.
And I spoke to the guy. I said, so where's the wine coming from? Okay, tell me a little bit more about the region. That's how I was doing it. And that's the best way. You have specialists nearby with the wine retailers, talk to them.
Right. I mean, obviously the internet has so much great info, but sometimes wines, like, and this happens a lot with wines I recommend, they'll go to a local retailer and they don't have those specific wines, but it's like, take it a step further, like ask them, okay, which wines do you have like this? Then if you don't have mm-hmm. that particular wine, it's just that mm-hmm. one, bridging that gap can be very, very helpful, I think.
I agree. That's the way. That's the way. And then, as I said, when you really start getting the passion, and you're going to start traveling around the world and going to those wine regions and continue to talk to the people behind, because you'll be meeting the winemakers, and that's exciting as well. Anyway, so
absolutely.
That's my advice.
I'm so glad you mentioned that too, because there really is nothing like standing in... Oh. I knew the dogs would start barking.
Oh, I love it.
Sorry, folks. They've probably seen them on Instagram before. They love to bark. But there's nothing like standing there in the vineyard with basically the person who's making the wine and enjoying it that way to really kind of, that's like really coming to understand a wine region. It's such a beautiful thing.
It is. I mean, you're there, you're in the vineyard or in the cellar with the person behind the wines. And then you get amazing explanation, passionate explanation, lots of energy in most of those speeches, and you'll be tasting and drinking some fabulous wines that you'll probably never forget, especially the first few bottles that give you goosebumps. Those yes. are the ones that completely imprinted in your brain.
And oh, yes.
That makes you go.
Fabulous. So along those lines, mm-hmm. tell me a little bit about, it's the 2016 vintage that's going to be becoming available very soon. Yes?
Yes. We'll be introducing to the trade the 16 vintage in March. And then the wine will be reaching the market, especially for the village level and higher. The wine will be reaching the market in the fall mainly. So you're going to start seeing that vintage, the Burgundy ones at least.
Great. So yes. For people interested in perhaps, you know, collecting wine or how, tell me a little bit about that vintage.
Overall, it's a small vintage for Burgundy. And I would say, unfortunately, it's another small vintage for Burgundy, but it's what we call a very classic vintage in the sense of precision, purity. The wine have overall a beautiful elegance. They're not very intense. They're good structure. Tannins are present, but both for the whites and the red and the reds, the purity, the precision, and they're terroir driven. So you really see the differences between one appellation and another one, and it's true across the board. But again, unfortunately, it's a small vintage because we got some frost that really affected the overall production and the yields.
Right.
But it's a classic, and the Burgundy people, when you talk about 16 vintage, Burgundy people are smiling and are very happy, which is always a good sign. So classic vintage in Burgundy, pure, precise, terroir driven, very expressive, very bright for both the white and the reds. It's not a solar vintage as you would have had in the 15. Mm-hmm. 15 was much more solar. I mean, 09 was, it reminds me a little bit of the 10 vintage with maybe a little bit more concentration as well.
Gotcha. And you guys do face challenges. Like when you say it's a small vintage, like what are some of the challenges that you usually face or that you have to look out for specifically in any given vintage?
Well, we have, there's the frost. And then if we go through the frost, there's then the, during the flowering season, if there is too much rain, then we get some coulure, meaning the pollination does not happen very well and the berry does not close very well. And then we have to look for hail. And then if we go through all that, there is also some disease like mildew, the powdery mildew, and we have to go through that as well. So anything can affect, especially for the Pinot Noir, even more than the Chardonnay. But anything, it's such a fragile grape variety,
right?
That can be affected, and the overall crop can be affected big time. But in 16, so we were down big time in Burgundy, but overall Europe has been down in the 17 vintage as well, and there is. More likely there might be a lack of wine for that vintage as well, of the 17, but not Burgundy. For once, we've been good. We've been through the 2017 vintage and the production is very good.
Yay. Because that kind of leads me to another question that I get a lot about, you know, you see it on the Today Show and all these other, you know, local other shows saying that there's a big wine shortage. We're going to hit a big European wine shortage in 2018. Is there any truth to that? Or?
Well, yes and no. First of all, each region is different. So if you take Burgundy, Burgundy was not down in 17, and actually production was pretty good. Now, if you look at the rest of the regions, like the Rhone, like Bordeaux, if you go to Italy as well, or even Spain, France was down 19%, all region combined. Italy, slightly more, slightly less than 25%. Spain, 15% less from 17 versus 16. So there will be less wines available. Now, will there be a shortage? Yes, for the top and the very high-end wines, but keep in mind that also there is some back vintages in those regions, so they'll be able to supply the wine. Now, it could be a way of as well to justify, you know, price increase, and that's it. So I would say to the consumers, do not freak out. Do not panic. The well is not going to become dry tomorrow of wine. But you might have a little bit of a harder time finding the wine you like if you like European wines.
Gotcha. So maybe for the kind of person looking for more everyday wines, they won't really notice it as much as, say, somebody who's looking to maybe add a specific wine to their wine cellar or something. It might be a little more challenging for that person, you
think. Exactly. And I do not know precisely the situation in 17 in California, but obviously some have been affected by those dramatic fires.
Oh, that's...
Which was very dramatic, but so.
Definitely.
So, but for everyday wine, no, there will not be a shortage. Maybe there and there, but again, overall. Good.
Well, I think people will be very relieved to hear that. And then I think you kind of touched on this a little bit before, but what do you like to drink when you're not drinking Pinot Noir or Chardonnay? Are there any other wine regions that you are interested in or exploring? I think you mentioned Ribera del Duero earlier.
It's true. I'm regarding the whites, and again, I don't have a child. I like my children, but if I'm out of Burgundy, which quite often actually, there is one specific one I truly love regarding the whites. I'm a huge fan of the Riesling from Germany. I believe that the Riesling from are the most precise, refined of all the ways that are on the market. I mean, they're like needles to me. They're sharp. and they're so expressive, and they have potential for it. As you can hear, I mean, I'm really in love with the Riesling from Germany. And unfortunately, my wife, not so much. So,
what does she like? You know, what does she like to drink?
She's a big Chardonnay. She's a big Burgundy, white Burgundy person.
I tried
Viognier, I tried the Chenin, I've tried many other grape varieties, and she always goes back to Burgundy, saying no, those are my wines. So
gotcha.
And she likes the wines from Chablis. Well, all the white Burgundies. And now, if you speak about the reds, I'm indeed speaking about Ribera del Duero. I have to say that I love Tempranillo. When it's not heavily extracted and not too high in alcohol as well. And I find in a producer I like a lot, which is Vega Sicilia, they have Pintia wine or Allion, or even the top of the line, which is the Classico Unico. But overall, I really like Tempranillo when it is well balanced. I love that. It's a complete different style than Pinot Noir. But,
right,
you know, I had a Shiraz from Australia not long time ago. It's called 100 Acre. And the wine just blew my mind.
Wow.
It totally blew my mind. I was like, I had no expectation for this wine. And I loved it. So, but yes, if I have to pick two, I'll pick the white, the Riesling from Germany, and the Tempranillo with Vega Sicilia wine.
Wonderful. I love that you're open at trying all kinds of different wines around the world. That's great. I think any wine lover, right, whether you're making wine or, you know, just that curiosity about tasting wines from different regions, and you travel so much too. So that, I would imagine that's a
I am exposed. It's true that I am exposed to wine, and I love to constantly try new things.
Yes.
I know what I don't like. Which heavily extracted wine and high in alcohol and almost kind of a, you know, deep, dark, almost syrupy wine. That's not my thing. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing wrong with those wines. It's just that not my palate. So,
right. Not your style. Absolutely.
Not my style. And I love champagne. But
yes. Love to hear that. That's definitely a favorite of mine as well. And are you on Instagram or are you just on Facebook?
No, I am on Instagram.
Okay.
Yes, I am on Instagram. I always wonder what my Instagram is. I don't know.
Because I love to encourage people, because you post the best pictures of what you're drinking, what you're pairing it with. And I always love to see what you're tasting and what you think. And I know, and you posted a recipe. I think it was a family recipe that you had made the other day or something.
All the sort of the pain de viande. That would be a meatloaf, but it's a complete, it has nothing in common with the meatloaf. But yeah, my wife did that the other day. It's a family recipe. That was beautiful. And my thing is, I think it's Laurent Drouin. It's just Laurent Drouin on Instagram. And
okay.
Anyone listening,
check that out.
I'm not posting every day, but I post when I really want, you know, to share something or a good moment. So yes, I do.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And now that we're in the winter months, even down here in Florida, it's going to be in the 30s tonight. So I know it's mind blowing.
Okay, fire up the chimney and open a nice bottle of red that will grab you, and like a good Oregon Pinot Noir or even good California.
Sounds dreamy.
Oh, by the way, I had a 1999 Pinot Noir Reserve from Mondavi days ago. And same thing. If you have any in your cellar, the wine is ready. I love it. Yes.
And then what are some of your other, do you have any specific other food and wine pairings for the winter that you're looking forward to?
I do what we call in France, les plats en sauce, which is kind of a braised, could be a bœuf bourguignon, for example. And I love to drink Gevrey Chambertin and bœuf bourguignon. And also sort of a blanquette de veau, which is blanket of veal, with white wine. And usually I like the wines from the Côte Chalonnaise in Burgundy, which is Ruy, which is a white, a Boudin Noir. Give me some Boudin Noir and I can go with the Rhône Valley, the southern part of the Rhône, where in Châteauneuf and Beaucastel is definitely, but don't get me wrong, I'm not drinking those wines every day, but
right.
Yes, anything that is that is cooked with love and long braised. I like that. In the wintertime, definitely. All the plow sauce anyway. Anyway.
Wonderful. Yes, clearly you have no passion at all for wine and food at all. Those all sound delicious. I'm so hungry right now. That's great though.
It's almost time for a good glass of wine. It's aperitif time somewhere.
Yes. Right? Amen to that. Amen to that. I know. I wish I had a glass with me right now, but shortly thereafter for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Stephanie. I mean, and again, thank you for everything you're doing regarding the wine and trying to bring more people to fine wine and educating and sharing the wines and the passion that you have for that product, if I may use that
Thanks. Word. Well, you make it very easy to be passionate about wine because, again, I love your wines and I'm so thankful you could join me today. And for anybody listening, if you'd like interested in any of the resources mentioned in today's show, you can find them at theglamorousgourmet.com/episode7. So again, Laurent, thank you so much. And I hope to see you when next time you're in Florida.
I promise I'll let you know, and I'll do that within the first 6 months of 18.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you.